Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're glad that you are here. This is a quasi-judicial process, and so it follows some strict protocols. And to begin to describe for us those protocols, I will, as soon as we do the have the clerk call the roll, I'll ask the city attorney to go over those protocols. Hi, Carla, how are you?
Hello, I'm good.
Did you have a good lunch?
I did.
Good. Could you please call the roll?
Yes. Saltzman. Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed.
Read the title first. Item 737, Appeal of Ash Creek Neighborhood Association against hearing officer's decision to approve with conditions the application of Tualatin Valley Water District and Garden Home Water District property owner for a conditional use to demolish two water tanks and replace with one water reservoir not to exceed 2 million gallon storage at 6217 Southwest Garden Home Road, LU10200954CUAD.
Ms. Beaumont.
Good afternoon. Before we begin the hearing today, I have several announcements that I'm required to make by state law. These announcements concern the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and some guidelines for presenting testimony. First, as to the kind of hearing we're having today, this is an on-the-record hearing. This means that you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. You can't bring up anything new. This hearing is for the council to decide only if the hearings officer made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to him. If you start to talk about new issues or try to present new evidence today, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. Second, in terms of order of testimony, we will begin today with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 to 15 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present the appellant's case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to Council. Next comes the applicant or the principal opponent, who will have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the applicant, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. And again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the applicant in this case. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the council. And finally, just a few guidelines for presenting testimony. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing, which means you have to limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the hearings officer. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the hearings officer. You may not submit new evidence today that wasn't submitted to the hearings officer. Again, if your argument includes new evidence or issues, the council will not consider it, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. If you believe someone who addresses City Council today improperly presents new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that's not in the record, you may object to that argument. And finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the hearings officer may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe someone has raised issues today that were not raised before the council, before the hearings officer, you may object to council's consideration of that issue. And that concludes the opening remarks.
I have a few preliminary questions to ask. Under the Government Ethics Statutes, ORS Chapter 244, the city council member has a potential conflict of interest if the member, the member's relatives, or the member's business or business associates could realize a monetary gain or loss as a result of the decision on the appeal before the City Council. City Council member can also have an actual conflict of interest if the member, the member's relatives, or the member's business or business associates would realize a financial gain or loss resulting from the council's decision on the matter before us. Do any members of the City Council wish to declare a conflict of interest? Hearing none. The next question is around ex parte contact. Ex parte contact has three principal elements: communication between a council member and a party to a quasi-judicial proceeding, about the substance of the proceeding that takes place outside of the public hearing. Do any members of the City Council wish to declare ex parte contacts or information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose?
Matt Grum of my staff has met with representatives of both sides of the appeal.
And Sarah Petrosini of my staff as well has met with both sides.
And Tom Bizzo of my staff has met with both sides.
Members of my staff have taken information in various forms, phone calls and emails from both sides. And my staff has provided a summary of that information to me. All right, we've declared our ex parte contacts. Does anyone present in the council chambers wish to ask me or a commissioner about any of the ex parte contacts that we have disclosed today? All right. Do council members have any other matters that need to be discussed before we begin this hearing? All right. If not, can we please have our very good staff come forward for an overview? Please begin.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Sylvia Kate, the assigned planner for this review, and I'm representing the hearings officer's decision, which has been appealed by the Ash Creek Neighborhood Association. The Tualatin Valley Water District operates a water distribution facility at the site, which includes two steel water tanks, each with 500,000 gallons capacity. The first was constructed in 1952, the second 10 years later. The district proposes to upgrade and redevelop this facility by demolishing the existing water tanks and replacing them with a single 2-million-gallon concrete reservoir. The district also requests an adjustment to allow vehicle areas on the site to remain in gravel rather than be paved with impervious asphalt. The applicable approval criteria are listed here in the hearings officer's decision, discusses the proposal and how it complies with these criteria. The 120-day clock for this application will expire on August 1st of this year unless the applicant further extends it. The site comprises two lots, approximately 0.65 acres in area, and it is developed with two steel water tanks and associated vaults, valves, and piping. The water facility is surrounded by a black chain link security fence. The southwestern corner of the site is landscaped with low plants and shrubbery, with pleasantly wide gravel pedestrian paths and three public benches situated at various points in this landscaped area. The site has frontage at the northeastern corner of the intersection of Southwest Garden Home and Southwest 62nd Avenue. The surrounding area in all directions are single-dwelling residentially zoned lots. R10 immediately surrounding the site and north of Southwest Garden Home, and our seven zoned lots to the south. The existing reservoirs are nearly 50 and 60 years old and do not have foundations. Neither tank meets current safety and seismic standards. Replacing the existing tanks will eliminate these obsolete structures, and a proposed concrete reservoir would add 1 million gallons of additional water storage capacity at the facility. This is an aerial view of the site in the immediate vicinity, and as noted in the hearings officer's decision, residential uses and development surround the site in all directions. The existing tanks are approximately 45 feet in height, and a proposed concrete reservoir will be 46 feet in height. The site will be fenced with security fencing similar to what currently exists. Some trees are proposed to be removed along the east property line to provide sufficient maintenance clearances, and new landscaping will be installed to replace the trees as well as new landscaping throughout the site. Street trees are also required. The existing sequoia trees along the east and north property lines are on average 100 feet in height and are densely planted such that they form a very thick landscaping buffer. Views of the existing facilities are quite limited from the north and east due to these trees. The improvements include additional landscaping along the south and west property lines that meet zoning standards and further screen the reservoir from direct views. The hearings officer received numerous letters and testimony at the hearing from neighbors in opposition to the proposal. Many asserted that because the proposed reservoir was so large, it would cast shadows across multiple properties to the north and impact livability. The applicant prepared this shadow study that demonstrates that the majority of the shadows cast are due to the 100-foot-tall sequoia trees on the site. Referring to the shading and size of the proposed reservoir, the hearings officer found that the record contains, quote, substantial evidence that the existing two water tanks and the current landscaping creates impacts upon the adjacent residential properties, end quote. However, he also found, quote, that the impacts will not significantly increase if this proposal is approved. Institutional uses in the single-dwelling residential zones must comply with special institutional standards, which is reflected in the table you see before you. The proposed reservoir meets or exceeds all the required setbacks, is under the maximum 50-foot height limit, and will exceed the required landscaping and screening. The proposed reservoir will result in a total building coverage of 25% of the site, well below the 50% maximum allowed. The purpose of these separate institutional development standards is found at 33.110.245A, which states, the general base zone development standards are designed for residential buildings. Different development standards are needed for institutional uses which may be allowed in single dwelling zones. The intent is to maintain compatibility with and limit the negative impacts on the surrounding residential area. At the public hearing, the applicant requested that the record be held open for 60 days so that the district could have more time to meet with the neighbors and collaborate on potential revisions to the proposal to address neighbors' concerns. The result was a revised site plan, which reduced vehicle area on site, eliminated an adjustment, saved additional trees on site, added additional berms and landscaping throughout the site for visual interest, and reconfigured a pocket park area at the corner with a public bench and a gravel side path. The applicant submitted photo simulations depicting the existing conditions, looking at the site from Southwest 62nd, and depicting the proposal with landscaping, looking at the site from that same vantage point. The applicant also submitted a number of architectural renderings depicting the revised proposal and landscaping from several vantage points. It's important to note that the existing conditions of the site include very sparse landscaping along the western boundary, thus exposing this facility to near full views to the residents along Southwest 62nd. The revised site plan not only meets the perimeter landscaping requirements, but also adds significant landscaping throughout the site and provides a public bench within a landscaped area at the southwest corner of the site. The hearings officer approved the proposal with three conditions. The first two, to ensure aesthetics are maintained, and the third condition, to ensure safety in an emergency. We will now go on a virtual site tour. This is a view looking to the south towards Southwest Garden Home Road. Subject site is to the left and Southwest 62nd is to the right. This is a view of the facility from Southwest 62nd. The existing landscape screening along this side of the site does not meet current zoning standards. However, the proposed improvements include installing substantial perimeter and on-site landscaping that exceeds the zoning code requirements. This view of the site shows the existing stand of sequoia trees, which are approximately 100 feet in height. These trees form a mature screen of greenery that obscure the facility from views from the north and east. Some of the trees along the east property line will have to be removed to allow sufficient space for the maintenance of the new reservoir. The trees will be replaced with new landscaping that meets zoning requirements. This view is simply to show the scale of the existing tanks and how tightly packed the planting is of the sequoia trees. This view shows a gravel path and a public bench surrounded by ornamental landscaping that's in the southwest corner of the site. You can see Southwest Home Road, Garden Home Road in the background. At the public hearing, a number of issues were raised by neighbors and the Ash Creek Neighborhood Association. Some, as noted in the hearings officer's decision, are not relevant to the applicable approval criteria. Other concerns raised were relevant, particularly regarding the visual appearance and the impacts of the proposal on the residential area. As previously mentioned, the applicant requested additional time in order to work with the neighbors and make revisions to the proposal based on the public input received during a series of public outreach events. The Ash Creek Neighborhood Association appealed the hearings officer's decision, stating that the proposal does not meet the physical compatibility criterion nor complies with the allowable FAR, or floor area ratio, for institutional uses in residential zones. In this slide, you see the exact language of the specific approval criterion. The hearings officer noted in his decision that this criterion, quote, does not require the proposed use to look just like houses in the nearby residential area. The hearings officer found that, quote, other times institutional uses that locate in residential zones do not look like and are bigger than residences in the surrounding area. The hearings officer found that the relevant characteristics needed to be considered collectively and a balance test employed. The hearings officer found that on balance, the proposed water reservoir will be compatible with adjacent residential development and that the proposed water reservoir will not significantly conflict with the appearance and the function of the residential area. That concludes staff's presentation. Are there any questions?
A couple. Thank you. That was a good presentation, as usual. What are the street improvements being required in Southwest 62nd?
PBOT is requiring a sidewalk and curb along the frontage. I believe there's a little bit of dedication as well to make sure those improvements will fit.
So any paving, a half street improvement?
No, I don't believe so.
So would this property be waivered in a LID?
I don't believe PBOT mentioned any waivers in their response. They were looking at the Southwest Garden Home Road and its transportation classification and determined that it warranted sidewalk and curb and sidewark improvements.
Okay, and thank you. And could you tell me a little bit more about the FAR? Why does this property have an FAR on it?
It's actually the institutional development standards have FAR, or floor area ratio. It's a ratio between the amount of floor area of a development in proportion with the square footage of the site. Institutional uses are allowed in single dwelling residential zones are allowed 0.5 FAR to 1 square foot of the site. Technically the reservoir is considered a building because it meets the zoning code's definition of a building. It has a roof and it's enclosed on more than 50% of the sides. Obviously, it has a floor at the bottom to make sure it contains the water, but the structure itself is not intended for human occupancy. The FAR issue, the Neighborhood Association submitted into the record and argued that because of the height of the structure, the city should consider that the reservoir has the equivalency of 4.5 stories, and therefore we should compute the FAR based on 3.5 additional imaginary floors, which is not how the city and BDS routinely applies that criterion. We apply it to existing floors.
So because it only has the one floor at ground level, we don't calculate that out. But in order to give us a sense of where the bulk of this build of this structure, if it did have floors like an office building, would this size of a structure be allowed on this property?
It would... If this were a building and did have 4.5 floors, as the Neighborhood Association is arguing is how we should look at it, it would exceed the development standards, and they would have to either redesign or request an adjustment and have that adjustment approved.
So we'll hear more about that.
I believe so.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right. Any other discussion with council? If not, then we will hear from the appellants. And you'll have 10 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is Dean Smith. I'm the president of the Ash Creek Neighborhood Association, which is the appellant in this matter. My residential address is 8802. Southwest 52nd Avenue in Portland. We appreciate the opportunity to appear before council on this matter, which is of great importance to our neighborhood. And I would like to say that we do not take our right to appeal this case lightly. We have exercised our appeal right only after careful consideration of the impact that the project will have on our neighborhood and also the strenuous opposition and objection to it by the most affected members of our community, the neighbors who are immediately adjacent to the project. We believe the central issue in this case is very simple. The size, scale, and style of the proposed project is not compatible with the adjacent residential properties and further is injurious to the overall character and residential qualities of our neighborhood. Those of you who are familiar with Southwest Garden Home Road in this vicinity will recognize it as a relatively pastoral setting with residents along a lovely two-lane road that curves through our neighborhood. And this is the context in which the council must evaluate whether or not this project, as currently proposed, is compatible with the neighborhood. The case focuses squarely on the core issue anticipated by the city code governing conditional uses in residential zone. The code, as you know, is designed to allow for certain types of otherwise nonconforming uses with conditions so long as they are not injurious to the neighborhoods in which they will be located. And therein lies the core question. Is a 2-million-gallon water tank twice in size to the current tanks and thus quite twice the current level of use in this location compatible? Does it meet the language and intent of the code? So the basis for our continuing objection to this conditional use application are these. First, the structure of the size and scale of this will alter the character and appearance of this section of the neighborhood to the detriment of the immediate residences and also the neighborhood as a whole. As you've heard, Chapter 33, 815-105, Section B2 requires that, quote, the proposal will be compatible with the adjacent residential developments based on characteristics such as site size, building scale and style, setbacks and landscaping. We do not believe this project meets this criterion. We believe the hearings officer has narrowly construed compatibility in this case. We believe further that council has the authority to more broadly interpret the code, which in this case is clearly intended to ensure that there are minimal adverse impacts from conditionally approved projects in residential areas. In this context, it's important to recognize that city code allows certain uses that are not allowed outright on the basis that they do not have significant adverse effects on the environment or change the desired character of an area. Further, the code sets forth approval criteria that allow institutions and other non-household living uses in a residential zone to, quote, that, quote, maintain or do not significantly conflict with the appearance and function of residential areas. Thus, the code specifically intends to protect residential neighborhoods from uses that involve a building scale and style not compatible with neighborhood character and livability. We believe it's within council's prerogative to interpret the standards and language in the code accordingly in order to protect residential neighborhoods. Second, we disagree that the project as proposed meets the maximum FAR requirements within the Institutional Development Standards. It is important to recognize that the standards set forth maximum and minimums that apply. However, these are not absolutely prescriptive in that a project can ostensibly fall within these maximum and minimums and still not be compatible in the context in which the project is placed. In other words, the standards are part of the evaluation of impact and compatibility, but not the sole determinants. This is where council, as creators and arbiters of city code, must exercise its judgment, since prescriptive standards in and of themselves do not always lead to the right and responsible decision. They serve as a guide, they do set maximums, but they also need to be looked at in the context, in the entire context. In evaluating the core issue here of scale, size, and building style, the best tool we do have to measure that is floor area ratio. In this case, floor area ratio is a difficult proposition. It's problematic. The hearings officer has based his findings that this project does not violate building scale solely on the criterion and notion that this is a one-floor structure. The basis for that finding is a dictionary definition of a floor, because apparently the code does not provide specific direction in this situation. However, one must look at the intent of the code in having FAR as one of the standards that must be met in the first place. That intent would necessitate a reasonable way of assessing FAR in this type of structure as a means of understanding its bulk and mass and therefore its impact. In our view, the appropriate way to calculate FAR as a measure of visual impact and compatibility is to base it on some reasonable measure, such as the standard floor height of a structure. In the case of this type of a structure, we presented to the hearings officer a 10-foot floor height, but probably more realistically for a warehouse-type facility, it would be more like three stories in height. In any event, in either case, it exceeds the allowable FAR. Using the hearings officer's method of calculating FAR, the proposed structure would have to be 170.4 feet in height to exceed the allowable FAR in the standards. Now, this clearly is not the intent of the provision of the code. The hearings officer's method of calculating FAR would render this metric in the code simply meaningless, which we don't believe was council's intent in promulgating these standards. But what if this were a different type of storage facility, say a public archive or a record storage facility? That would, say, be typically a facility like a warehouse with 15-foot tall floors, or in this case, three floors. In that event, the same size structure in this same location could not be allowed. Same type of use, passive storage. Same size of structure, one allowable under the hearings officer's reasoning, one clearly not allowable under the FAR standard in the code. Now, we're not proposing that council make some sort of arbitrary determination here that this is a storage facility of three floors and therefore, you know, you have to disallow it and that it has, you know, it doesn't have walkable floors. What we are suggesting, though, is that this should inform your decision of compatibility. If one exactly the same structure is allowable in one instance but not in another, both passive storage uses, it demonstrates that judgment and an appropriate interpretation of the intent of the code is essential in this case. We've included in our testimony an attachment that you have in front of you that shows the FAR calculation with a 10-foot floor height. We didn't do that for a 15-foot floor, but they both would exceed the requirements of the code, and they have a striking difference in what the FAR comparative FARs with the surrounding residential developments. Finally, while the applicant has described this project as a replacement of the existing water tanks, it's in fact an expansion, a significant expansion in the use of the site. The proposed structure is twice the size of the existing tanks and represents a considerable increase in the scale and use with a corresponding impact on the neighborhood. And this, in our view, in itself constitutes an impact that damages the residential character and supports our belief that it does not meet the compatibility standard in the code. And it's important to recognize that the closest residence to the structure is less than 45 feet from the perimeter of the facility. So the context is a tightly compact neighborhood around a site that is an oversized structure on an undersized parcel. Now, finally, we would like to say what we would support, and that is an actual replacement of the 1 million gallons of water storage that's currently at this site. We have no objection to the construction of a new seismically sound structure with a capacity of 1 million gallons. We would have no objection, in other words, to a full replacement. But doubling the size of the storage tank on this site in this location is untenable to the neighborhood. We believe that this conditional use application should be denied and that the hearings officer's decision should be overturned. This project design does not render the project compatible with adjacent residential developments as required. Thank you.
All right. Do you have questions?
Just to clarify, sure. So the neighborhood doesn't mind whether it's two small 2.5 million tanks or one million gallon tank.
Well, we think a 1 million gallon tank, which is a complete and full replacement of existing use, would be appropriate and would be compatible. We think a 2 million gallon tank, doubling the size, very tightly squeezed on this site within the setback requirements, does not meet it in the context of the vicinity of residential dwellings. There are no other water towers that we're familiar with or aware of in the city that have this size of a storage facility on this small a parcel, 0.67 acres. So it's a very constrained site in a neighborhood, and we don't think it should be allowed at that scale.
Thank you. And are the existing tanks plain concrete?
No, they're a metal. And they're painted metal.
Painted, and this.
This would be a gray concrete facility. Would not be colored at all, in our understanding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now hear from the principal opponent of the appeal.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. I think we need to
hear
from supporters of the appellant.
My apology. How many people have signed up?
12 people signed up.
All right. You have 2 minutes each.
I think the notice said three.
Hmm?
Notice said three. Did you want to do two?
Mm-hmm.
Two. Okay.
Yep.
The first three, please, coming up are Charles Osborne, Dr. Cheryl Baer, Nancy Donner, and they'll be followed by Travis Stevenson, Kip Nagley, and Virginia Otmar.
So for all those testifying today, we just want your name. And if you are authorized as a lobbyist or authorized to speak on behalf of an organization or a business, you must declare that as well. When you state your name, we're glad you're here. If you've absolutely prepared for 3 minutes, we'll let you go the full 3 minutes. But we found that what can be said in 3 minutes can be even more compelling in two. Please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm Charles Osborne, resident of 8021 Southwest 61st Avenue in Portland. I'm a simple resident and represent no one except myself. My opinions are my own. Good afternoon, members of council, and Mr. Mayor. Tualatin Valley Water District and hearings officer Gregory J. Frank have misinterpreted the City of Portland zoning code in attempting to site an industrial facility in a residential zone in violation of law, specifically Title 33. As former Portland hearings officer George Fleerlidge teaches in his 20 February 1981 denial of Water District's early siting attempt, code dictates that structures and facilities must not be so massive that they are detrimental or injurious to the character and value of the surrounding properties. These are qualitative conditions. But code conditions and aids us by allowing us to quantify these conditions. One way is through the comparison of the massiveness of the structure to the size of the lot. The proposed facility fails the criterion set forth by law. Title 33 specifies the maximum allowable ratio of floor space to lot size. The proposed tank fails this criterion. Water District and Officer Frank attempt to misdirect attention from their action to the extent of including Webster's dictionary definition of the word floor to the record to justify their attempt to circumvent code. They point out that the 50-foot-tall concrete floor has but one tall tower has but one floor. If code had intended to consider the footprint of the structure in relation to the size of the lot, the word footprint or foundation would have been used, as those words are used in numerous other places in code. But code specifies floor space. The massiveness of any structure is defined not only by length and width, but also by height. A residence of four stories height is four times as massive as a single-story dwelling. Code intentionally uses the term floor space, the sum area of all floors, as a simpler way of quantifying the massiveness of the structure rather than demanding all sorts of geometrical calculation measurements of roof pitch and dormers and balconies. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hi.
I'm Dr. Cheryl Baer, and I reside at 8039 Southwest 62nd Place on a half for 33 years. I've tried to do my civic duty in Portland by helping you maintain the status as the City of Roses. I have a rose garden of 800 bushes. Consequently, we get a lot of visitors to our yard. The current water towers have not posed a problem in the past because they were shielded by mature bushes and trees, and they were painted green. Therefore, they harmonized with the environment. Those were removed 2 years ago for quote-unquote security reasons, perhaps in preparation for this application. And the result is a large storage structure that fairly defines the environment for us and changes the character of the neighborhood. The proposal that is before you would replace those two structures with one large facility or structure with double the capacity, which means it would continue to dominate the whole neighborhood. And I love living in Portland on off of Garden Home Road on 62nd Place, and never in my wildest dreams would I have ever dreamed I would be living on Water Tower Place with a megalith that truly defined my environment and my characteristic, my neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next three?
Is there Nancy Donner? Let's go with Travis Stenerson, Kip Nagley, and Virginia Otmar.
Hi,
members
welcome.
Of the council, I miss Nick Fish. Where's Nick?
He's on vacation. Well-deserved vacation.
Good for him.
They'll be followed by Jack Klinger, Nancy Trulinger, and
my name is Nancy Donner. I live at 6254 Southwest Garden Home Road, diagonally across the street from the proposed monstrosity. Okay? Now, I'm going to yield most of my time because a picture is worth a thousand words. I have a picture for you to pass. It doesn't fit with the neighborhood. It gives no benefit. When our taxes go down, we're going to lose tax money for our Portland. We've been carrying water for them for 60 years. It's not even for us. And this proposed double 2 million gallon that they want to shoehorn on two-thirds of an acre next to a road that is hardly wider than this table. Okay? Anyway, in all due respect, I urge you to just turn this down. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Travis Stenerson. My family and I have lived in the neighborhood for around 5 years. It is a neat neighborhood we were happy to move to. I'm concerned with the proposed water tank size, proximity to Garden Home Road, and new visual impact. I fear it will be a new target for taggers and graffiti. I'm concerned about the surrounding large sequoia trees, which will be removed. The population of considerable size trees is one of the reasons my wife and I chose to move into the neighborhood. I'm concerned what could happen to our surrounding homes if there was an earthquake and the larger size tank was breached. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir.
My name is Kip Nagley. I live on 61st. about a block away from the the proposed water tank, and I've lived there for 42 years. I remember about 20 years ago, it was Metzger Water District at the time. I don't know why the name has changed, but wanted to build two more identical tanks to what existed there and what's there now. Neighbors got together and opposed them, and a hearings officer turned them down. And given as a reason was a negative impact on the neighborhood. And building one that's twice that size would even be more negative on our neighborhood. I'd like to take this opportunity to ask the council to consider that impact and to reject the proposed plan and suggest perhaps that we wait another 20 years and take another look at it. Thank you.
Ma'am, go ahead.
My name is Virginia Otmar. I live at 6245 Southwest Garden Home Road, directly across from the water towers. I have lived there since 1972. The proposed water tanks do not fit with the livability of our neighborhood. It cannot be mitigated. Thank you for hearing us.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Next three are Jack Klinker, Nancy Trulinger, and Shun Wei on Garden Home Road, 6316 Garden Home. Schoonover, thank you.
Why don't you two more?
Jack Klinger, Nancy. That's Mr. Schoon.
Thank you.
Let's go with, how about Lyndon Runke?
Please go ahead.
My name is Nancy Trullinger. I'm a board member of the Ash Creek Neighborhood Association. My address is 5445 Southwest Dolph Drive. I have lived in this neighborhood for 32 years, and I thank you for allowing me an opportunity to speak to the council. I speak in opposition to that new 2-million-gallon water reservoir. This huge new water tank will seem like a commercial billboard, a blank billboard set down on the ground with family homes on Garden Home Road. It would be at ground level. When people have purchased homes or rented apartments to live in this area, they knew about the two current smaller water tanks, where they were located, and how they appear in the neighborhood, offset from the street, landscaped, and partially screened by trees and shrubbery. A new 2-million-gallon water tank will impact the character of the neighborhood. We are being asked to have something placed in our neighborhood that will sit on a small lot and stick out of place. The proposed reservoir is simply too large for the land and too out of place in the neighborhood. I respectfully ask that the Tualatin Valley Water District be required to downsize their water tank to a more appropriate size. Thank you for the opportunity to give my opinion.
Thank you. Sir?
I didn't know I was going to speak. I'm Bill Schoonover. I live at 63. Where do I live?
You don't actually have to give your address. That's fine.
I live on Garden Home Road.
All right.
Mayor and council members, I didn't know I was going to speak, so I do not have a prepared statement. But I think when you consider what we hear every day on TV, we're hearing that, you know, government says this, government says that. And then in the background, we're hearing the citizens. And we're finding that it's very difficult to believe people who are representing us in government. But the truth always comes from the citizens. These people have lived there for a period of 20 to 40 years. It can be, has been, a very attractive neighborhood. And I cannot imagine something as gross as twice the capacity being placed there. I think it's probably very unfair to those residents who have lived there for so many years. If, indeed, the needs of the community can be met with the lesser capacity as presently exists. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Sir?
Good afternoon, council members. My name's Lyndon Runke, and I live at 8121 Southwest 62nd Place, which is directly to the west of the water tanks. I have a wonderful view of what's there now and an expectation that if this is built, if you allow this to go forward, you will be amazed at how imposing this structure will be over the neighborhood. I've included a fair amount of information on my take on the hearing officer's opinion on PCC 33815105B2 and 3. The requirements that the proposed tank be compatible with the adjacent residential developments based on characteristics such as site size, building scale size, setbacks, and landscaping, or if it is not compatible, as the hearings officer suggested, if we took one of those requirements and made that, the failure of any one of those would make it have to be mitigated. I've included some pictures that are in the record. One is a picture from me, Exhibit 24. The top one is how those tanks exist now. That's right in front of my house. It's approximately where I'm pointing to is an electrical panel, if you'll look there, which is approximately, the tank will be approximately 50 feet from where I stand. The bottom one is me standing in front of a 2-million-gallon tank, which is a little bit shorter than the one that we'll get, approximately 50 feet from the tank. Now, I appreciate the fact that the applicant, the hearings officer, and the city believe that the landscaping shown on Exhibit 40A will mitigate the problem. However, I think if you look at Exhibit 40A, you're going to notice, I think I have another minute, don't I? 3 minutes? I think you're going to notice that even the applicant's vision of what this thing is going to look like is imposing. It is out of character with the neighborhood. Now, even if you accept that the site size and the style and the setback are okay, there's no question that the size of this structure is incompatible. And you have the ability to interpret the code. And if you'll please read my comments, you're going to see that, simply put, this cannot be mitigated. So, I mean, to quote President Obama, you know, you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. And I know these are derelict tanks and they badly need to be replaced, but please don't let the cure be worse than the illness. And that is exactly what we're looking at as neighbors. And my three daughters will grow up with this thing looming over us every day.
Thank you very much. Just to clarify then, this second picture is an actual tank, a $2 million tank?
That's the 2 million-gallon tank. That actually is right off Barnes Road. It's below the road. It is a TVWD tank. It is a little bit shorter than ours, and it is sited on about 2 acres, surrounded by forest, and on one side, a strip mall.
Thank you. And then is this about a... So what's being proposed is that the new structure will be closer to your property than the existing structure.
The reason for that picture, Commissioner, is that where I'm pointing on the top picture to the electrical panel, that tank will come about 8 to 10 feet from the electrical panel, which is about 50 feet from where I stand. And that bottom frame shows the size of a 2-million-gallon tank about 50 feet from where I stand.
Thank you. I was wondering if it was photoshopped or what, but it's an actual two photographs. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I believe we have one more person, Laura Gione Smith.
I actually submitted my statement online. Okay. I was just signing the guest list, but okay. I will add a couple of things.
Hi, my name is Laura Gionis-Smith, and I live at 8050 Southwest 62nd Place. I've lived there for 21 years. My husband has lived there for about 18. We definitely enjoy the street, and I've always been proud of it, been proud of its beauty, the peace, and, of course, our neighbors' roses. That we're lucky enough to have them right across the street from us. My husband and I dread this project and what it will do to our property values, what it will do to our children. We have a lot of children on the street that just enjoy taking their rides, on going back and forth on this dead-end street. And this park will take away from that. It'll take away from them. I'm sorry, not the park, but the tank will replace the park. And there is no room for benches or... At least I don't envision it. I don't envision it as being something beautiful like it is now. So thank you for listening. And like I said, I've sent my email.
All right. Now we will hear from the opponents of the appeal. We'll have 15 minutes. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and members of the council. My name is Tommy Brooks from the firm Cable Houston, and I represent Tualatin Valley Water District, who's the applicant in this matter. With me today is Mark Knudsen, the district's chief engineer, and Chris Goodell, who is with AKS Engineers, who put together the application. Mark will provide an overview of the project, and then I will address the specific issues on appeal and our approach to that, and then Chris will be available to answer any specific questions if they come up about the application or the project's design. So turn over to Mark.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Pleasure to be here. A quick overview of the Tualatin Valley Water District. We are a public agency, a water service provider in Washington County. We have a publicly elected board of five commissioners. We serve over 200,000 people in unincorporated areas of Washington County, as well as areas of the City of Tigard, City of Hillsborough, and City of Beaverton. We are the second largest water provider in the state of Oregon, with all the accoutrements that go along with that in terms of pipeline, pump stations, and reservoirs. We have three sources that include the City of Portland, Joint Water Commission, and Aquifer Storage and Recovery. And as such, we are also Portland's largest wholesale customer with a Portland water bill of approximately $6 million a year. What you see is our general service area, the dark blue area on the map, and the project in question is the Garden Home Reservoir that serves our Metzger service area just north of Highway 217. The reservoir itself is located in the city of Portland, but it serves an area of Washington County in the Metzger service area. Here you see a Google Earth photo of the project site with the two existing half-million-gallon reservoirs, and particularly notable are the 100-foot-tall sequoias on the north and the east side of the property, again, located by Garden Home Road and Southwest 62nd Place. So the existing reservoirs, as mentioned in the staff report, were constructed in 1952 and 1962. Each tank holds a 500,000 gallons. These are steel tanks, and the reasons why we're concerned and interested in replacing the projects is because they're near the end of what I would characterize as their economic useful life. The picture on the lower right-hand corner is a picture probably only an engineer can love, but what you see is the foundation for the existing tanks. Basically, they sit on a small curb. Any lateral motion because of seismic action would cause the tank to literally shake off of the foundation. So they don't meet seismic requirements, but more importantly, it would cost more to fix the tanks than it would to replace the tanks. But beyond that, the tanks also don't provide the needed capacity. We've done planning analysis to look at the capacity requirements, and the tanks as currently configured don't meet the storage requirements of the zone. So our proposal, as outlined, is to demolish the two existing tanks, construct a new 2-million-gallon single storage tank that is of similar height and similar width, to increase the landscaping and screening associated with the project, and to keep the park-like amenities that we've previously installed. We think there's significant benefits associated with the existing site in that it's the existing use is the same, substantially improve structural reliability of the existing site. One of the key features is that the connecting piping is already in place, that all of the piping in the street is already there, thus avoiding the need to further disrupt the public or the neighborhood by constructing more pipes in the street. And last but not least, it provides gravity supply all the way from Bull Run through the Powell Butte Reservoir to this location. Thus, it has rarely a minimal carbon footprint associated with this project. This slide shows a cross-section looking east from Southwest 62nd, and the upper picture shows the two existing tanks, each 46 feet wide and about 45 feet tall. And the lower picture shows the proposed reservoir section, which is 92 feet, or the two 45 put together. So we're characterizing it as similar in width as viewed from 62nd. And again, essentially the same height, about 1 foot taller possibly. This is a photograph taken from a similar location on Southwest 62nd. Looking at the two existing reservoirs, and you see the giant sequoias in the background. We prepared photo simulations to indicate what the project would look like after the existing tanks had been removed and the new reservoir constructed, so this is the exact same vantage point. We prepared these photo simulations to address the questions of perspectives associated with photographs taken from the street and other tanks, and so we wanted to try to accurately create the perspectives that would be present from the views from the street.
Those large, sorry, just to clarify, those large trees in front of the structure don't currently exist?
Some of them do. Some of these are added as a part of the landscaping project. This is planting as it's planted. This is at the time of construction when the project is complete. And then this is at full maturity in approximately 20 to 30 years after the trees have had a chance to mature, fill in, and grow. We think that the landscaping provides a very effective buffer and screen for the proposed project. Wanted to quickly overview the outreach efforts that we had associated with the project. We originally had a neighborhood meeting before we made the proposal, generally outlining the concept a little over a year ago. It was relatively limited attendance and essentially no feedback. When we submitted the conditional use application, the feedback we got from the staff was that there was opposition to the project. We held a neighborhood meeting prior to the public hearing. We received a lot of negative comments. We went ahead with the public hearing, but specifically requested the record be held open for 60 days so that we had the opportunity to work with the neighbors. We then conducted additional neighborhood outreach to be able to get additional feedback, to pursue additional opportunities to refine our proposal. As noted, we increased the landscaping, the screening, we provided additional amenities, and we eliminated the need for landscape buffer variance. Then, before finalizing our proposal, we had yet another open house with the neighborhood to give them a chance to review our proposal and provide yet further comments before we finalize our proposal. With that, I will turn it over to Tommy.
As staff indicated in their presentation, there's two issues at appeal. In this appeal, the first one being compatibility and the second one being the specific standard of FAR. With respect to the first issue, Ash Creek Neighborhood Association has specifically cited to 33815105B2 of the code and stated that the project is not compatible with respect to building scale and style. This is the code language at issue, and as you can see, it sets out specific characteristics on which one can base compatibility. However, the code itself does not define compatibility. That doesn't mean it's an unanswered question in the code. The other section which staff already previewed is 33110245, which are the institutional development standards. And the very specific purpose, the express purpose in this code provision, is that these development standards their intent is to maintain compatibility with the surrounding residential area. So although the compatibility itself is not defined, there are specific standards that get us to compatibility. Because the hearings officer agreed with us and found that the application satisfied the institutional development